Chapter 56. A little boy visits me. Huge, somber brown eyes gaze up at me. His serious expression reminds me of Grandpa Lorenzo when he would talk about the old days. This little one approaches everything with an intensity far beyond his few years. I want to make him smile. Kneeling in front of him, I say his name. Then I kiss the back of his hand before pretending to lick it and clean his face like a mama cat. His beautiful lips curve into a smile, filling my heart with so much light. Rays of sunlight kiss his tousled hair, brown curls with a few random strands that glimmer copper. I bask in the gloriousness of that smile. His tiny hand beneath mine is warm. Then a larger hand is atop mine. A warm thumb caresses the soft pad between my thumb and index finger. For one perfect instant, my hand is sandwiched between both. As I open my eyes, the tiny hand fades away, and there is only Jamie's touch. "You're here," I say. It's been 12 days since he watched me die on Sugar Island. The bruises that made him look like a raccoon in the trailer have faded to a yellowish brown. The bite impression on my left shoulder is about the same color. "I'm sorry, Donis. This was the soonest I could come. There were things I needed to take care of with the investigation." He looks at the colorful balloons from the twins. "Ron said you're getting out tomorrow." I keep my hand beneath his. I'm moving to an apartment downtown to be near my medical appointments. My mother is staying with me a while, but then I'll be here on my own. Jamie looks down at our hands. When he looks back at me, his eyes glisten. "I'm sorry, Donis," he says again, "that you were part of this, about Lily and David Fontaine, for everything that happened to you." His voice cracks. "I am so, so sorry." He cries. I don't soothe him. He needs to feel this, and I need to hear it. Investigations involve real people. Informants face real risks. Developing real feelings for me doesn't wash away that he was willing to use me, a girl he didn't know, to pursue a case and get a career boost. Sunlight has changed to an orange dusk outside my window when he wipes tears from his face. At last, I remove my hand from his so I can trace his scar. "Jamie, you can't keep doing this. You need to find out where you come from. Stop pretending in other communities and find yours." "I wasn't lying about being Cherokee. I am, but that's all I know about it." Jamie closes his eyes against my palm, cupping his jaw. "Everything with you was more real than anything in my other life. It didn't feel like pretending. Being Jamie Johnson, a guy playing hockey and falling in love with you, it was the realest thing, Donis." His eyes open. "Don't you see? My life before this? That's what felt fake." "You are not cut out for undercover work," I tell him. "You cannot wear masks like other agents. It affects you differently. You get sucked in a way that Ron doesn't. He can live the lie because he knows it's a lie. But you? You don't know the truth of your life." I grip his hand. "Promise me you'll try to find out?" Jamie nods before lifting my hand to his lips. He plants kisses that I feel all the way to my toes. "Let's make plans to be together." There's a frantic edge to his voice. "When you're healed, you pick a school anywhere in the country and I'll go there. We can meet as strangers, like none of this happened. We can start fresh."
"Oh, Jamie.
There you go again. Ready to live the lie, but not ready to live the truth." "I love you, Donis. You know that part isn't a lie." His voice is low and steady. "I felt something the first time I saw you. At Chimakwa. Seeing you in person, not just research in a case file." He reaches for my hand. "You were right in front of me. Beautiful and real." I want to be with him, fall asleep to his gentle snoring, share an apartment,
my books and music mixing with his until we forget whose is whose, and there's only our stuff. Starting every morning intertwined, running together, discovering new things, true things, about each other. My daydreams must play across my face because he gets excited. I need you, Donis. Help me find out if there's a plate set out for me at a feast somewhere. I don't think I can do it without you. Something heavy drops inside me, into a deep cavern where Travis's words to Lily bounce off jagged walls. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. I can't do it without you. I need you. I can see our life together, Donis. You can too, right? Granny June's voice. Things end how they start. Jamie and me. We started with deception. I could end it now with a lie. Tell him that I don't see a future for us. Lie about the little boy with the crazy messy hair and dark eyes that observe the world quietly and deeply. I decide to stand in my truth. I love you, whoever you are, wherever you came from, without our names or stories. I touch the sides of his face, the perfect side and the scar. He closes his eyes, immersing himself in the sensation of my fingertips. I love you, and I want you to be healthy, to find whatever is missing in your life so you stop pretending, stop putting yourself and others in dangerous situations. Another deep breath, more pain. It's your journey. You gotta do your work, and I gotta do mine. I taste salt from my tears. Your need scares me. I'm afraid I'll focus on your needs over mine. I clear my throat, breathe in and out, steady myself. I love you, and I love myself. I want us to be healthy and strong on our own, so that no matter what happens, whether we meet again or not, I look him in the eye. Love means wanting you to have a good life, even if I'm not in it. And your love for me, it should be that strong. So you want that for me too. He says nothing, just sits there, strokes my hand with his thumb. His eyes are sad, as if someone turned out the lights and pulled curtains across. Finally, he lifts my hand to his lips and gives it a long kiss before setting it gently down on the bed. He leans over and kisses the tip of my bruised nose, smells the top of my head as if committing it to memory. Then he walks to the door. He never looks back. Only after enough time passes, during which I've imagined his elevator ride, the long walk to a car in a distant parking garage, and his drive away from the city, do I speak. We named him Wobbin, I say to the space where he was sitting, telling him about the little boy from my dream, from a someday in the future. A future in which we are both healthy and independent people. After the eastern direction. It dawns on me. I don't even know what our son's last name would have been.